Accession number 11106, Mr. T. Wilson, Reel 1.
Mr. T. Wilson, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Wilson?
The 3rd of September, 1912, in Sunderland.
Was that in the city itself?
No, in Sunderland, Sunderland North. Just down Roker. Down the Roker, really.
What kind of an area was it?
Well, with the shipyard building area, that's where the G.L. Thompsons and the shipyards, you know, operated from. And when the orders got in, everybody was all right. And then when they didn't, well, things were really a bit rough. An average wage then when a fella would bring a family up would be about £2.50 a week.
Did your father work in the shipyards?
My father was a woodcut machinist in the sawmill. He was what termed as a sawyer, because he used to make all their own parts of the ship there, them days. Every part of the ship was built on the premises, because nowadays they just couldn't prefabricate it.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes. I had Brother Jim, Brother Bill, and there was me. And then my father married again. There's a stepbrother, Joe, and his sister. And then the family my father had with his second wife, my stepmother, were about 4 or 5 children. And there were three lads and three lasses. Their group, like, which they are alive at the present day. Anyhow, the total family average about 13.
And your mother and your stepmother, did they have to work?
Well, women never worked those days, really. They worked during the war, but it was a woman's job at home, really. But she couldn't, if she did go to work them days, a woman was getting 2 shillings a day for working all day. Because I know my aunts, they went out to work. One went in the fields and snagged turnips and things like that for about 2 bob a day. Another one went and doing housework. There's some people who were better off than what she was, and not 2 shillings a day. And that's what they got.
So life was pretty tough, was it?
Yes, it was, really. As a matter of fact, when you went to school, you sometimes had no shoes. Your father had if you did have shoes, you had to maintain them, cover them, cut your hair. There's no money spared outside those. He had to do a whole lot.
Have you any idea what kind of wage he was earning at this time?
£2.50 as a tradesman.
And the house, how big was the house?
2 rooms.
So how did the sleeping arrangements go?
Well, it was termed then what they called a desk bed. That means and my father being in the wood, made it himself, made his own furniture, and he used to sleep 4 or 5. But as I said, the 13 come on later on. But there was Jim, Bill, Joe, myself, and Florrie at that time when we were in 2 rooms. And later on, he got a job at Horton College as a sawyer. Therefore, we moved from Sunderland. I'd be about 12 year old then. And I'd be about 1923. We moved to Horton Colliery. We got a four bedroom house, a colliery house. So then onwards. Then the second step family started coming in from that period.
Before you moved there, when you were still in Sunderland, the area you say was a basic shipbuilding area.
Oh, definitely.
What were the people like?
Well, everybody knew everybody, right? And if anybody done any wrong, then you who done it. And nobody dare do any wrong. Otherwise, the local police, he was number one. And he's still your friend. You were really speaking, you disciplined both inside the home and outside the home. And that helped you.
What kind of discipline did you have in the house?
Father was fair. Because when he married again, he had a girl and a boy. And we had to make him the present day as though it's your no flurry. And that's who we brought up. The family, step family, was termed as one. As though more or less starting all over again. And believe me, that takes a lot of belief, but was the truth. Because my father was a gentleman.
If he had to punish you, what kind of punishment would you get from him?
One crack, and never no more. One crack warning and never no more. Because his word, he trusted you. And he wanted you to trust him. It was good teaching with the parents. It might have had to serve me to present here to pass it on to my grandson, and I'm wasting my time partly, but sometimes I'm getting through them. Because the basic things are there and it's got to be done. Right, well, I'll tell you an instant. Dad, about 12-year-old, but just for that, I won a scholarship in the school, local school, Stanfield Street School in Sunderland. Headmaster was Daddy Grayson. We were called Headmaster Daddy, so I'll tell you the friendliness there. And my teacher would be Mr. Robinson. They gave me a parcel of clothing, a shoot, broke shoes, and that very expensive stuff, you know, like well beyond us. For me to go to the higher school. And my dad says, take them back and thank them very much. He says, I've got other sons to bring up. And he says, you're all going to get the same crack of the whip. He says, I can't make better of you, laddie. And I can't leave us. So I had to take them back. Good clothes, which I'd never had before I got. Broke my heart. Well, that was the discipline.
Where did you start your schooling?
Started school just after the... You mean at 5-year-old, it's St. Thomas Street in Sunderland. Thomas Street School.
What was that like?
Just had the weight seat. Well, as youngsters, you didn't know much. And then when you got a certain, you transferred to High One, which is down to Stanfield Street, which is not, you know, you could walk to the places.
And again, was the discipline tight in school?
Yes, teachers were respected. Honestly.
Looking back over your schooling, how did you feel about the kind of education that you were getting?
Excellent. I was still getting it the present day. And it was only normal, simple things, arithmetic, writing, reading, essays. You had to do an essay. If you had a weekend, you know, the weekend was Easter weekend, what were you doing on each weekend? The teacher said, right, we'll do an essay, what are you doing this weekend? Different one, that, different that. And you had to form a story in your own mind. And the teacher let you get on with it. And the judge on that.
Were you caned?
Can't remember that, and I don't think so, because the teacher was number one. And that's why we did show respect for her. Majority of that, there was an occasional fella like we would term as a bully, like that, but he didn't do nothing.
How did you spend your leisure time as a young boy?
Leisure time? Playing with children on the door, then the same age, girls and boys. Or running down the docks. Of course, we had the advantage of the seaside there at Roker. Go down to Roker. And then people would go up the river, things like that. We'd maybe sit on the quayside, waiting and then coming back. and they would take some food up, and they probably didn't eat it all. And we were grateful that they'd give us it. People who were like a little better off. And many times we'd say, well, there'll be a trip going up the river, as youngsters. We'll sit and we'll wait and come down, because you know when the tide, you always to go up the river when the tide went up, and you come down the river when the tide come down. And we had the youngsters at that time, and it was a bonus to us now and again, but to really see something like that.
You said that at times you didn't have shoes for school.
Definitely.
Your clothing, was that passed on to you from older brothers, sisters, what
yes,
have you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I know my father get the sewing machine out and make me a patch out of my dead mother's costume. Because we went to Sunday school, normally. That's just, this was me, my first mother. Went to Sunday school, normally on a Sunday, and you got a little card, and the clothes what you had was taken off you, and the old ones put on and go out and play. And they had to be kept as they were, you know, them stiff white collars. I think I've got a photograph of that one, taken in 1917.
Which Sunday school was it that you went to?
Thompson's Memorial Hall. No, Thompson's was a shipbuilder in them days. Thompson's built the ships there. And they probably, you know, like, it's Thompson Memorial Hall. That's just past Dundas Street. And then there's a police station nearby, Barclay Street, I think, where the police station was by. That's where a lot of people got mails from many times, from the police station.
When you went on to the later stages of your education, where did that take you?
Well, as I said, I moved to Horden Colliery in about 1923, and I'd be about 12 years age then. I went to the school at Horden, and I just stayed there till in X7 for about 18 months and things like that. When the time passed away, I was just more or less sitting by myself, really.
That was in effect waiting for the end of your school days?
End of the school days of 14.
Had your father been in the Second World War? The First World War?
Yes, he'd been in the Green Howards.
That would take him away from home?
Oh, yes, he's in the war when it begun and it finished, because he had then the Monster, like, you know, the first one. My brother was also in peacetime in the Green Howards. But he came out. He didn't do his full time. He was getting sick of it, I don't know, but on compassionate grounds or something, and you know, he got out.
Did your father come through the First World War all right?
Yes, without being wounded in anything like that.
So when you left school, what work were you put into or went into?
Well, when we left school, in a horrible time in September, and that was the period of the 1926 strike. And we started work at Horden Colliery later on that year, just after the 1926 strike. And you would do little jobs as trapper boy, or going over the deputy, what they call dust and so on, bits of dust and help the deputy. Until you got build up. And your wage then would be 12 and 6 a week.
And what hours did you work?
You worked about, I think it was 8 hours. There was what they call 3 shifts, 4 shift, back shift and night shift. And you had to, even at 14, take part in those 4 times. Such as night shift, go to work at 6 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock the next morning. The other one would be about 3 o'clock in the morning, and then the other one would be 10 o'clock in the morning.
And this would be underground?
Underground, oh, definitely.
What were your first feelings going down?
Well, being young and experiencing nothing else, it just couldn't be natural, because a lad living around with you, it come to them, well, if they could do it, the feeling come to you, well, if they can do it, I can do it. You know, and it wasn't like a punishment. It's come to you natural, really.
What was the comradeship about between men working underground in quite dangerous situations?
Really good.
And how did it show itself?
Well, I found myself thinking, well, some chaps could have done more, like what was on piecework, more than what we were. They had to prove themselves that they could do it. If they could do it, all well and good. And there wasn't any, he's earning so-and-so, but believe me, he had to put his backbone in for them to do so. He didn't get it given if he earned any extra money, which is very little as well, mind you, we're talking about pence.
And was this a six-day week? Did you work Saturdays?
No, it was a five-day week. Definitely a five-day week.
You mentioned that it was the time of the general strike.
That's when it ended.
What was the conditions around you at that time? What were they like?
Well, the school used to, I was just from finishing school. The school would give you a bun and a pot of cocoa or something like that. And that was all you got all day, more or less. Unless you could scrape something good home. Or if you could go and get some coal from the coal heap, and sell it for sixpence for a bag. Now it's about 4 or 5 pound a bag now. You could sell to such people as the men of the area or some shopkeepers and things like that. And sixpence is a lot of money.
Did your father suffer? Was he out of work?
Oh yes, he worked in the woodwork department, sawmill. Everybody was out. I can't truly remember, but what the real thing was, if the railway men had come out with their miners at that time, they succeeded, but they didn't. So therefore, they went back on more or less worse terms. Well, we being youngsters, we had no knowledge of the routine of it, see? I mean, it was all we're going back to work.
Had you joined the Boy Scouts as a young boy?
Oh, yes. When I was a youngster, before I was when I was going to school, we used to do the Boys Brigade in the town in Sunderland then.
Was this the Church Lads Brigade or the Boys Brigade?
Boys Brigade, it was. And even the Salvation Army, they were quite decent, if any youngsters, even if they wanted to teach them, learn instruments and things like that. The facilities are there for them really good. As a matter of fact, I can remember once being a young son, I went up to Salvation Army and I come back with a BSC flat. And the old fella says, you can get that out of here. He says, I'm not going to use all the metwork cleaning that. And I take it back. He said, because it'll take a lot of metwork for the cleaning that, and it'll be a BSC flat.
This is a trombone, isn't it?
No, it's a big instrument.
You said you were in the brigade. Did you have to have a uniform for that?
Yes.
How did you come to get it?
Well, they provided that. Oh, yeah. Expense wasn't on your parents' part. Otherwise, you would never get in.
What kind of uniform was it?
A little pillar box hat. And then a belt and a shirt. But they provided it. If you had to provide yourself, you wouldn't get your parents wouldn't let you encourage you to go in because they couldn't afford it. When it comes to any type of uniform, school uniform, there wasn't money for them to even purchase them. So you denied anything like that without demanding a uniform from your own personal family. Provided the organisation provided one, you were accepted to go.
Did you have to pay anything to be in, like a small fee every week?
Never. Not that I can mind on. Because when they're nothing about sell, really.
How often did you meet?
About once a week. Once a week. And then there's some kind of the church, the Thompson Memorial, whatever, a festival there, and then they'll move a field there and they'll go to the same harbour or something like that for one day. I'm sure they'd take you to the same arm and bring you back home, and that was a yearly outing. And everybody was there and showed that they got to the early out because of the treat, just even for once a year.
Did you do any kind of drilling with the boys' brigade?
Yes. Well, not a lot really, because youngsters like that, as we were in one organisation and then were slipping into another one and then into another one if possible, where the benefits was most.
So how many did you go into?
I was in the Boys' Brigade, I was in the Salvation Army, and I was in the Boys' Scouts in Dock Street, Stoneland. The church in Dock Street, just two streets away, they used to organise Boy Scouts. But I say, one would give you something to eat and then whilst you're there, and things like that. And the youngsters, as we were, would move around, where it helped us most.
Did you learn discipline whilst you were in these?
Always had to show respect, without doubt. Oh, yes.
Was this a problem at any time?
No. Well, if as I said before, if it started homeward, it was always Mr. So-and-so, and things like that, or the lady.
So you were working down the pit.
Yes.
How long were you there?
I started the colliery at, that's 1926. That's after the big strike. I'll be there until I joined the army in June 1933.
And what was the job that you were doing in the pit when you came up to the time of joining the army?
Driving the Ollie's engine.
And had the wages changed then? What were you earning then?
I'll be earning 18 shilling and 25. No more than 26 shilling a week.
What made you go into the army?
Well, it's a queer thing to say, but it was often said at Auden Colliery when the buzzer blew once, that was for one seam, because there were three seams at Auden. There was a low main, open seam, and main coal. If the buzzer blew once on the night time, that seam was idle for the next day. Or blew twice, it was the other same. If it blew three times, was it what would tell me hutton same. And that used to go off regular as clockwork. And you found yourself, you had no wages. As a matter of fact, you had to form part of the dole office in the miners' hall. If you lost so many days' work, you got a little bit of compensation back for working. Well, it was getting ridiculous. About 1930. And say, well, we joined the army. The army pay was then 14 bob a week, 2 bob a day, but was still something in your pocket.
Did any friends influence you, or family?
No, my own decision.
And your father didn't try to change it?
No, as a matter of fact, my father was proud. He said, you'll find it better off.
So how did you go about joining the army?
I just jumped on my bike, went down to West Hartlepool recruiting office.
And what did you do there?
The recruiting sergeant said, well, he says, I said, I want to join the RAF. Well, as usual, being a short about 5'2" or 5'3", you didn't get much opportunity with a recruiting sergeant. Because where it was required, the numbers required, that was the only one available to you. What qualifications you had. He ensured that if it was required for that area, or what the numbers he had to get for so-and-so, because he used to give you an examination, a written test and things like that. It's more good, it's a normal test. The recruiting sergeant more or less decide where you were going.
So you had a written test in the recruiting office?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Do you recall what form that took?
Well, it was more or less about standard 4 education test. You know, when you're about 12-year-old and like that, you got a test about 12-year-old. Well, I'll say a standard 4 education test. It wasn't too hard, but you had to think, and The average fellow could pass a daisy anyhow.
Did you have a medical on the spot?
Oh, yes.
What form did that take? Was it particularly intense? Or?
No, it wasn't really, but the doctor seemed to know that you were airborne, really. You might be, your eyes might be cold, you could see cold dust in your eyes and things like that, which what you call the pulley, you know, and you say, you always had cold dust, and I used to get it off. You could see that in your mind, and just looking at you. And then you within a period of time, you'd be quite all right. Because it did sound like you had no chronic, like more like chronic diseases or like that, you know, the windy chest or you could walk right or stand right, you know, and things like that. The trouble is your height, you know, and if you're small like that, in a foot regiment.
And that's what they told you? You're too small for anything but a foot regiment?
Oh, yes, more or less. That's the only one open to you. And then you used to turn around and say, well, I might be able to squeeze you in. And you were keen for the getaway once you made your mind up, because you didn't want to disappoint your people, the door not your main let down and your main chased, you know, and that would make you feel horrible. So you're more determined to accept it.
And did he offer you the Dermline Infantry?
Yes.
And obviously you accepted, obviously. Uh-huh. After the recruitment, did you go back home then?
You came back home and then you got told when to report to Durham.
Do you recall when this was?
Uh-huh. You report to Durham and then you get a railway about to Durham and take the defending barracks. And from then you more or less handed over to Stock and Battle.
What date was this?
That would be the 16th of June, 1933.
And when you got there, how were you received?
Oh, quite all right. Just say, right, come in, lad. And just wait till so many more lads join up and make about 30. Then you start soldiering. Then the odd days, well, you might be cleaning the barracks out, whitewashing the part and things like that, making it look respectable, you know, until you got 30 blokes together then.
So you went in and you just did odd jobs until you got a squad formed.
Keep the place respectable and things like that until you got 30 blokes or 26, whatever they required.
How long did that take from you going into that situation?
Well, I think mine took a month, really. It did, mine took a month. So 3 weeks at least. Because I can remember just doing the staircase out and passing walls and things like that. And hard jobs, you know, and it was easy.
You didn't object to doing tasks like that?
No, good Lord, no.
And were you just in civilians? You hadn't been given any uniforms at this time?
No. Now, when your squad gets formed, everything, well, you eventually get bit by bit, that's yours, but until it all started together. Because you'll get when you form the squad, there's a sergeant in charge, a full corporal, and a lance corporal. And the lance corporal slept in the beds in the barrack room with us. And he was responsible for showing out the fitty kit and things like that, or make your bed up and things like that. And what that'd be doing in the normal routine. How to make your bed, and then when you got different parts of equipment, how to fit it on, and how to fit it onto your body and things like that.
What was the... Did your squad have a name?
Ains. Ains squad. As I said, the squad are termed the battle honours from the First World War. Ains, Ouse, Inkerman, and things like that, you know, see.
And were the barracks blocks named after the battle honours as well? That you were living in?
Yeah, oh, yes. It was termed as Ains squad, Ouse squad. They were all had that same. And then later on, there'd be a bit of pride that one squad could beat the other, you know, like, and we used to do that.
What did the barrack blocks look like?
Well, they're quite readable. As I say, there's a photograph of it, but you had to maintain it and keep it clean.
How did you do this?
Get on your hands and knees and scrub the floor. As a matter of fact, I spent my 21st birthday, I think I was 20 or 20, I'm not sure what it was, birthdays, scrubbing that blooming floor. And a little lance corporal saying, put some more water on, like, you know, when you would turn with the lamp cup, when you found out later on, see, he could wring his neck.
So you had to scrub the floor. What other parts of the barrack room had to be cleaned and how?
The windows, and there was a stove in, you know, like a big stove, or like that had to be blackleaded. And then there's a big coal cuttle, what would hold all the coals. That had to be kept clean. Then there's a table, as you see, the table in the barrack room. That was really clean, because, you know, we've got crew every day. And then there's the iron corners, and that had to be shining. And then you see, that would be like silver, that. But, you know, what the term is, a burnisher, it's like little round rings on a leather pad. And you keep rubbing that long enough, it changes though it's been chromium plated. And that had to be done like that. But everybody had a task. Everybody was given a task for to keep that barrack room up to that standard.
And how many beds in a barrack room?
There'll be about 26 in hours.
And you said you had Lance Corporal, do you remember his name?
The Lance Corporal, they called him Armstrong. And the full corporal, he had a bunk at the side of the barrack room. They called him Rig. And the sergeant, he lived in the married quarters. They called him Scott, Sergeant Scott. Those were the three of the squad I was in, Ian squad.
Were they good?
Yes, I met Sergeant Scott later on after the war in West Hartlepool.